Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
So you're watching the evening news, listening to the news radio, or your favorite news website, and once again you ask yourself, was that the news? I mean, A, was that really the most important stuff that happened in the whole world today? B, am I any closer to understanding anything at all? Or C, is there anyone else out there that would have appreciated real news? Today you will meet the master of all things news unworthy, the master of FARC. What is FARC, you may ask? FARC is what fills space when mass media runs out of news. It's not news, it's FARC. FARC is supposed to look like news, but it isn't news. But I am your host, experimental psychologist Jane Kawaski, Dr. J, along with my co-host Jim Nico, CEO of Social Network Intermedia, LLC. And you are about to meet the master of FARC, Drew Curtis. Welcome to the Social Network Show, Drew.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, Drew, thanks for actually filling the gap out there that media actually doesn't fill. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, you know, what the problem is that they've actually sort of, in the last 15 years since I started doing this, they sort of flipped their model over actually giving us nothing but the stuff, the filler stuff. Like, and the reason that happened was because about three or four years ago, they started doing A-B testing on content and headlines and found out that all people really want on the internet is puns and cats. And as a result, if you're a news organization, what do? You know, so you basically package it up, make it look kind of like it's legitimate, but it's not. And so you end up with what I call outrage porn, where if you are going through your Facebook feed or Twitter and getting mad at stuff that people are talking about, well, that's on purpose. They're actually trying to make you mad, so you click on it.
Mm-hmm. Just like disgusting is an attraction. Hence all of the very strange, very elderly people's pictures on ads. Oh, well, you wrote a book back in 2004 called It's Not News, It's FARC, How Mass Media Tries to Pass Off Crap as News. And it's now in a Kindle format. And Stephen King, I assume that's the famous author, not a childhood friend who happens to have the same name.
Actually, he's a childhood friend of my mom, so that helped.
Okay.
It's easy to get his attention that way.
Anyway, he, whoever it was by that name, said, at one point I laughed so hard I almost threw up. Something about Homeland Security and goats. But let's come up to date. What? Give us the basics of how FARC.com works and its evolution over the 15 years of existence.
Yeah. So it started out being sort of like my daily read. I'd get in the morning and I'd find a few things that I saw were interesting and I'd post those up, and that was kind of it. What happened was is that really early on, I allowed people to submit stories for consideration. And what happened was is we had people submit so many articles so quickly that it became apparent that I didn't need to go looking anymore. All I had to do was go read what was being submitted. So that's what the model switched to, which was basically people basically pitch us story ideas with, you know, new, funnier headlines on them, and then we take a look at them, and anything that makes me laugh really hard is what goes up.
Uh-huh.
So it's sort of an interesting hybridization between, you know, sort of the free-for-all of, you know, basic social media and editing. You know, it's sort of like Reddit with an arbiter, basically somebody who says, yeah, here's the deal, this is funny. And the reason why was because we actually did try voting for a while, and because FARC is more about comedy than about news, we discovered there's broad disagreement as to what's actually funny across cultures and regions, to the point where, because there's no real agreement on it, what everybody does agree is funny is, like, you know, sitcoms in the evening and cats. Well, I don't like either of those. Well, I have two cats. They're okay. But, you know, it was not the site I wanted to run, and so we basically went to an editorial-driven site instead. And it's more or less been working pretty well. It's kind of surprising that it's been going on this long.
Uh-huh. The How do you do that with the different cultures and nations and stuff? This is international, of course, being on the web. So do you notice a difference in what you get from where?
Yeah, well, so basically what we do is, like, the idea when I started this was, is like, it wasn't really a company idea. It was more kind of like, this is what I think is funny. Let's see what happens. And the next thing I know, a few million people showed up. And so our idea has been basically that appears to work. So we pay little to no attention to what we think people might want and only post the stuff that we like. And we've kind of been sticking to it. And it's just like, I borrowed a line that John Cleese used once in an interview where somebody asked him why Monty Python was so popular. And he said he didn't know. They were just amusing themselves, and they got lucky that other people thought it was funny. Uh-huh. And I would say the same thing.
Well, it's like if the cook always fixes what they want to eat, then at least the cook's happy, and that sounds
exactly.
Like...
exactly. I've had some interesting conversations with, like, BuzzFeed and Taboola and Outbrain about algorithmically trying to replicate this, and we have sort of an agreement to disagree. They think, I mean, they're very algorithmically oriented, you know. They do A-B testing, they'll try 100 different headlines, with the one everybody clicks is the one they run. But I argue that you can't do that with comedy. You might be able to do that with news, but with comedy, it just doesn't work. Like I said, nobody really has an agreement on what's funny, so... So we're just going by our gut over here, basically.
Well, I think you're kind of lucky to have landed on that, because I think what you say about comedy is probably true about news, too. It's just that it's not going to, you know, fly. I mean, if you did news that was interesting to you, I think you'd find enough people out there that would find it interesting to fly with that. But
that's actually been my major argument about what's wrong with the news cycle right now, is that journalists sort of forgot what their job was. In some cases, never knew. They were of the opinion that they were supposed to source stories that, you know, hadn't been found and bring them to the top. What they forgot was is that they all kind of know this. They all talk about how Edward R. Murrow and Walter Cronkite and all these guys were, like, you know, the paragons of news media. And they always chalk it up to, oh, people trusted them. Uh-huh. In actuality, I disagree. I think what it was is that they applied context. You know, Walter Cronkite made people care about the Vietnam War in a way that nobody's been able to make anybody care about the Afghanistan War. And I think that's what those guys did, and that's what media's job is. It should tell us, why should we care about this thing that we don't currently care about? And that's the unlock. The problem is it's really hard, and algorithm can't do it, and there's very few people that have an eye for that kind of thing. So it's not like all they have to do is just, you know, switch to that. But in my opinion, that's the solution to the problem.
Could it be a human factor might be involved?
I think so, and the reason why is because, like, you know, I talk to these algorithm guys, and they're all about it, but the algorithm's only as good as the programmers. And, you know, one of the things that happens in particular with, like, not only news cycles, but comedy is that the environment changes. And when the environment changes, what people find funny or interesting changes a lot. And, like, I'll give you an example. Like, the news media will freak you out all day long about whatever the thing of the day is until stuff actually goes to hell. And then they switch. And they go, okay, it's not terrorism, everything's good, everybody should remain calm. So honestly, like, one of your metrics on whether or not something terrible is actually happening is watch what the media is saying. If they're stirring the pot, then you can probably ignore it. But if they're going out of their way to say, okay, we don't know anything, everybody remain calm, don't worry, that's when you should actually freak out.
Wow. Well, hey, by the way, what in your position, 15 years into this, right now, today, this hour, what is fascinating you about what you're doing or what we're doing or what somebody's doing?
Yeah, well, as far as the news cycle goes, what's fascinating is finding that people are getting sort of really fed up with the algorithmic stuff, like, and watching Facebook sort of trying to hijack what people normally would do. I mean, I think they're playing with fire there. I think they should leave human behavioral, normal cognitive behavioral, you know, instinct alone. You know, people don't particularly want a ton of news, and Facebook is, for whatever reason, trying to cram it down people's throats. I think they should just let it go back to cats and puns, honestly. I mean, it's not particularly informative, but at the same time, anytime you try to hijack a normal human's neural cycle, I think you're playing with fire there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's also true, isn't it? We had Rebecca Lieb, the author of Content Marketing, on recently, and one of the things she taught me early on was don't try to do the news per se. Comment on it. Analyze it, et cetera. But look, those news feeds and the agencies, the people that have been there first, they're going to get that out before we even notice it.
Well, not only that, but the difference between the first person to report a story that's breaking and the 100th person is like 10 seconds.
Yeah, that's it.
Being first doesn't even matter anymore. We actually whenever we have breaking news, we usually wait about 10 minutes because what happens on our end is people start submitting the story, but they're submitting riffs on the headline, and I'm waiting for the funniest one to roll in, and sometimes that takes a little bit of time, but usually they're pretty good.
That's good. That's good stuff. So anyway, so in FARC, it's like, now how many, I hate this question, but do you have a lot of traffic now? I mean, tell us about, or talk about traffic a little bit, will you? People visit to the site and comment and stuff like that?
Yeah, we get about 3 million uniques a month, but it's really unusual. And one of the interesting stats for people at least to understand web traffic is that on websites, an organic audience is considered to be key, and a 35% of your audience being organic is considered to be the top end that you could expect. And organic is basically somebody who either types in the URL to come there or comes in off of a favorite link. And the reason why that 35% is high is because people are, you know, finding stories elsewhere. They're coming in off of Twitter or Facebook or Google or whatever, and that would not count as organic traffic. That's where people just sort of got referred in. Well, FARC is 95% organic traffic. We don't get referrals from anybody. And
wow.
It's partly because of the way the site is designed. I mean, we existed long before SEO was even a thing. And it's partly because that's on purpose, because I want to make sure that I control my own traffic channel, and I don't want to hand it off for free to Facebook or Twitter to basically then change the rules on me later. So the organic audience kind of surprised people, because then when we drive this traffic elsewhere, it's people who essentially clicked on a link because they wanted to go to see it. And so when the traffic shows up on other sites, they tend to wander around a bit. So whenever we link to somebody else, we'll jam between like 6,000 to 8,000 clicks somewhere, but then they'll generate another like 10x just wandering around the sites that they go to. And in some cases, they pick up the audience permanently. So that's what's sort of unique about our audience, is that it really doesn't behave, no other audience behaves like that.
Interesting. Well, I know that you just said something in there about you wanted to maintain control over, you know, what was going on. And in our next segment, I'd like to go into that in terms of a move that you made recently and finding out how little pushback there was about it. So
yeah.
We'll look forward to that.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
This is the story of Mrs. Clark, who has lived on this very block most of her 80 years, often seen walking to town or serving brownies to the neighborhood kids, and everyone loves her. 2 years ago, a certain family member moved in to look after Mrs. Clark, and that's when everything changed. Mrs. Clark became the victim of elder abuse.
Elder abuse is often closer to home than you think, or want to believe. McGruff the Crime Dog here. The National Crime Prevention Council wants you to know the signs of elder abuse. Bruises, isolation, reduced activities, poor hygiene, depression, and financial problems. Protect yourself and speak out if you recognize signs of abuse in others.
Elder abuse is a crime that affects over 2 million senior citizens every year. Even more astounding, it's most commonly committed by a family member or someone they trusted. If you suspect abuse, contact your local law enforcement agency. To learn more, go to www.ncpc.org. That's ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council and the U.S. Department of Justice.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show. This is Jane Karwoski, and you're listening to us talk with, about us being Jim Nico and I, talk with Drew Curtis of FARC.com. Now, there was something that you made a move on just recently in FARC that is current, I think. You just banned something. What was that?
Yeah, so we've been discussing this for a couple of years because half of the monitors on Spark are female, and we have a high percentage of female readers, like it's around 40%. And one of the questions I got was, is I had women asking me, can you guys ban misogynistic speech? And as a guy who doesn't pay any attention, I had no idea what the hell they were talking about. And it's sad, too, because like this is something that every woman already knows about, and most guys don't. You know, same thing like my friends of mine, you know, talking, my white friends talking about Ferguson and not understanding what's going on there with the race relations. It's like, well, this doesn't ever come across our plates. We don't see it. And so one of the things they were asking me was, could we make guidelines to take out certain types of speech? And I'm like, sure, like what? And they're like, well, you know, like misogynistic threats, like basically, you know, it's okay to have a debate or an argument online, but it's not okay to attack the other person because they're female. And I'm like, yeah, okay, that seems reasonable. So we kicked the guidelines around for a while, and about 2 weeks ago, one of my female moderators said, hey, when are we going to launch this? And I was like, well, you know, I was like, I didn't feel like we had it quite down yet, but at the same time, it's like, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, and I'm like, I feel like we had enough of it down to where I was like, you know what, let's just give this a shot, right, see what happens. And so we basically announced, hey, guess what, we're banning this. You can't threaten to rape people. You can't call women bad names because they're women. You can't attack people because they've got breasts, and we'll just go. And what was fascinating was is that this was seen in the mainstream media community as a very risky move, mainly because there's a lot of other sites out there that there is a lot of misogyny on, and they have had a lot of backlash. But what fascinated me was we got practically none. I'm not saying we didn't get any, but everybody who got busted because of this new rule, I was really happy to see them leave because they were jerks.
Mm-hmm.
So it worked out great.
Okay.
What brilliant move. Thanks, man. We really appreciate that. We're going to spread the word on that.
Well, so what I'm doing as a result is that was so surprisingly and so surprisingly rewarding that I'm actually building a blueprint that I'm going to release probably about 4 to 6 weeks, which is basically, so you have an online community, say you're a news organization and you want to get rid of this, here's how. And it isn't actually hard, but it also, like, people are just afraid of pushback that never comes.
Yeah.
You know, and I think also, too, it's like, yeah, we got 5 or 10 complaints, and I think most people aren't looking properly at the number of complaints. You see 5 or 10, you think, oh, that's 5 or 10,000. No, it's 5 or 10. We had a very bad botched redesign back in 2007. I had thousands of people emailing me. So I know what the threshold is on a complaint, and we got 5 or 10. So my argument is that not only was that surprisingly easy, but everybody should do this immediately.
Uh-huh.
There's no point in keeping the speech around anymore.
Powerful, man. Very. And thank you so much. We work with a lot with women's empowerment in the movement, and I can't tell you how much that means to us, and we will be spreading the word, and I will not try to be funny because I'm not.
Well, like I said, it was so easy. I was shocked, and now I feel like a massive jerk for not having done this before. You know, like we should have got on this a while ago.
Well, that's a nice thought, but better late than never, you know.
We're going to convince everybody else.
We salute you. Well, what do you think your members, no doubt for female members, that last move was probably the thing they appreciate most. But what do members in general appreciate most, do you think, about the online community?
It's an interesting community because since it's centered around comedy, it really opens up the variety in all other aspects. Like, so if we were like a political site, you know, liberal or conservative, you would have only them. But because we're about comedy, you've got this wide spectrum of political interests. It's almost one of the few sites out there where you're going to run into alternate political opinions because that's not what everybody's there for. They're there for the funny. But what's interesting is that it's such a diverse group. The only thing that everybody has in common is they're generally fairly smart. They're sort of interested in what's going on in the world, and they're funny. And, you know, so we started setting up meetups, you know, across the continent because we have a bunch in Canada. And mostly because I am a terrible extrovert. I get bored when I travel. So I was like, who wants to have a beer? And the resulting number of friendships that have happened, I mean, there's over like 300 children that have been born as a result of people who have met on the site. We've got to be pushing 1,000 marriages at this point. It's absolutely crazy. And I can't take credit for that, but it's been fascinating watching it happen. I think that's probably the value that everybody gets out of it.
Uh-huh. The commonality, of course, is that people see the news as being absurd, or at least when they see a lot of news that's absurd, and we'll point that out. Now, you have different categories. It's not just absurdity. It's obvious. What are some of the other categories you have?
Yeah, we've got I'm using, like, they're basically descriptor tags, and what those things do is they inflect the headline, and I'll give you an example. So let's say the headline is Obama has a plan to fix Social Security. Now, we have a hero tag and we have a dumbass tag, and the inflection changes dramatically depending on which tag you slap on there.
Okay.
And that's what that's doing.
And what was the first one? I heard the second one, but what was the first?
Zero. Because you could say, yeah, so if you're an Obama fan, you'd be like, yay, he finally did it, he fixed it. And if you're not, you'd be like, oh, there's no way he's got a solution. So we've noticed with politics that it's more or less arbitrary what tag we slap on there, but it's interesting how it completely changes the inflection of the story when we do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, has anyone gone in there and made a name for themselves internally, like in terms of comedy, like writers and so forth?
Yeah, actually tons. There's a guy who we accidentally launched in a viral photograph about 10 years ago, a photo of him in a maintenance closet with his hand in a jar of mustard. And they were just, I don't know how anybody found that thing. He and a buddy were just screwing around, but he ended up going viral and ended up getting a job at Second City up in Toronto as a result of it.
Oh, Jesus. That's great. Great. And now, yeah. And now he owns a mustard factory.
Yeah, well, he wishes he did, because everybody, you know, he's known as the mustard man now. So he's like, no, I kind of wish I could. We were talking about merchandising, but yeah. And there's countless examples of stuff like that happening on there, too. It's just we had a hosting platform built when Katrina hit for anybody who lived within 500 miles of there and had a couple extra rooms in their house. We connected people fleeing the destruction with people who had an extra room, and a lot of friendships were created. So just dozens and dozens of things like that. It's just really a unique site.
And a few babies came out of that one, too. I know it. I can feel it.
Oh, tons of them, sure. Hopefully everybody knows who the parents really are.
I noticed there's also a lot of FARC gatherings.
Yeah. No.
Yeah,
you, tons, seriously?
Yeah, we have a big one coming up in Chicago in October.
And Prague.
Which should be a lot of fun, yeah.
Oh, so, my God.
Well, guys, actually, I got to drop. It looks like they're going to do the final. Right.
Okay, so right. Thank you for dropping in while you're waiting for your plane to take off. And
yeah, no problem. Anytime you guys want to have me back, let me know. I'm usually, when I'm not getting stuck in Salt Lake City, I'm usually pretty free. So it's not good.
Okay.
Looking forward to it, man. Terry will let you know when it's up, the show, and let's keep going. This is great.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks, man.
Good talking again.
Thanks.
We sure appreciate Drew Curtis from FARC.com talking with us today and cluing us in on organic traffic and what's real and what's not real about the news and why you don't want to snooze, but go to FARC.com. Also, in an important note, banning misogynistic comments on FARC. He's a real innovator, one of the first to do that in the real major news players can follow suit. He's drawing a blueprint to where other sites can ban these negative comments about women, and it's not that hard to do. So thank you, Drew.
And he received surprisingly little pushback from that, 5 or 10 out of 3 million.
What an innovator this guy is. Amazing.
And thank you for keeping us company today on the Social Network Show, where you hear commentary and analysis of our connected networked world, including practical advice from top business and marketing mentors, news from people combating cyberbullying and abuse, as well as experts on privacy, surveillance, and women and girls empowerment online. Please follow us on Twitter at @SocialNetShow. Jim Nico also publishes regularly on LinkedIn, so you can follow him there. And don't forget, you can get in touch with us via questions@thesocialnetworkstation.com. Please have fun and be safe online and off until we welcome you here again.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. Coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on the Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.